Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, the 2nd of September, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Today on the show, Cherry, the politics of AI data centers. 70% of people say they do not want one where they live, and this backlash to these data centers has become this rare issue, it seems, in American life in 2026, where people across the aisle are finding agreement. So we're going to unpack how politicians are evolving on this, including a major shift from Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. We're going to look at what's driving the public outcry and analyze if that outcry is warranted. And a big question I have personally is, like, will we look back on this moment and think about it the way that we think about factories in the Industrial Revolution, the railroads, the interstate highway system, internet infrastructure? Or is this proposition with these AI data centers just fundamentally different for reasons that I think we're going to get into in the show today? And then this competition stuff with China, like how much should we make of that? How real are those fears? So I think a lot of big, interesting questions on the show today, Cherry.
Yeah, we have a few interesting, smart people that are going to be on the show. We'll talk about the polling numbers. We have political strategists on both sides of the aisle who are going to weigh in. And of course, we'd love for you to weigh in. Our questions of the day: why do you think AI data centers have become such a hot button issue ahead of the midterm? And will it affect your vote? 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're on Facebook or YouTube, you can leave your comments in the chat. I think people might have some thoughts about this.
I think so. I think that there's a lot of people in this region who are very activated about it. There's proposals happening all around us. People have been getting fired up. So we want to hear from you today, especially if you've got one being proposed in your backyard. We'd love to hear from you. Before we get into our trio of local news stories, Cherry, it's Giveaway Wednesday.
Giveaway Wednesday!
All summer, we've been giving out a pair of tickets to an event in the region. Stick around towards the end of the show, and we'll reveal this week's event and give you a chance to win.
You know, one thing people like, free tickets, man. So stick around.
Our trio, first story, Cherry.
Yeah, strong storms overnight left a path of destruction in parts of South Jersey and in areas right here in Pennsylvania. And you probably got the weather alerts Tuesday night, including a tornado warning for Burlington County. Our region saw heavy rain. I heard it, right? Strong winds. It caused trees to fall into homes and knocked out power lines for residents in both New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And Mantua Township in Gloucester County, they were hit the hardest, so much so the school district there announced that all schools would be closed today. They have roadways blocked by trees, and we're still dealing with some power issues this morning. And Kevin, this may or may not surprise you, but the Philadelphia region has been a national hotspot for flood warnings this year. The National Weather Service in Mount Holly issued a record 147 flood warnings for its coverage area, which goes from Delaware to North Jersey. 76 of those warnings were right here in the Philadelphia metro area. And according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, they did an analysis, and among 2,200 counties, Philadelphia and six of its neighboring counties ranked in the top 25 for the number of flood warnings this year. And we still have 4 months left to go. And the reason, according to meteorologists, is a ring of fire, thunderstorms, and a warm ocean, but it's also improved radar and on-the-ground observation. So meteorologists have gotten a lot better at spotting when it's time to issue these warnings. So that does contribute to it, but it's also this ring of fire. I was like, ring of fire? Right. Thunderstorms? Right. What in the world?
And one of the things that jumped out to me from the coverage last night and this morning too was the idea that sometimes these happen in such precise geographic areas that just get hammered with rain. And one of the examples that they brought up was this, you know, terribly tragic 2023 storm in Upper Makefield that killed seven people. And while that storm was happening there in Bucks County, the rainfall at the airport was zero. So it's like it's happening
wild
all across the region. There's these little pockets sometimes where it can become very intense and very dangerous and truly, you know, a risk to safety. So,
And you got to pay attention to these warnings, because those flash floods literally come out of nowhere and it just dumps the water and then goes away. So there's that.
Story number two, Cherry.
Oh, yeah.
Parents across the region have been juggling the cost of back-to-school shopping into their monthly budgets. Mm. And NewJersey.com is out today with a piece where they priced out the school supply lists for several New Jersey elementary and middle schools. They used Walmart as the vendor example and found a cost of $50 to $100 per kid. Mm. And then they matched that with data from the Century Foundation, which found nationwide costs up about 7% for back-to-school shopping compared to last year. That doesn't even take into account things like backpacks, clothes, shoes. Like, as a parent, you know those things need to be updated pretty regularly through wear and tear. What's driving the cost? Tariffs, inflation, downstream impacts of the war with Iran. And it just seems to be one more thing where people are finding ways to cover costs as things keep getting more expensive. And it feels like every other day on the show, Cherry, we're talking about affordability in some way, because it does just seem every bill you get in your inbox, it seems like it's a little higher than it was the day before, the month before. And people are just kind of getting hit from all sides.
Yeah, gas prices, electric bills, water bills, the whole nine. And I know if you have multiple kids, it can be a struggle. My grandmother was a teacher, and she used to fill the gap for parents who could not afford it. She used her own money. She would decorate the classroom, and then she'd buy extra scissors, pens, glue, pens, paper, whatever, for kids so that no one would go without. And these days, there's easy ways. I wanted to put this out there to support people. I tap in on teacher wish lists all the time. There's a hashtag #ClearTheList2026 where people can find teachers in their region to support, or you can just help the teachers in your local neighborhood by donating supplies. I think that does help, because there are a lot of parents who just don't get the things because they can't afford it.
Right.
And so the teachers do try to fill that gap.
And then there's the added cost too. Like in Philadelphia, for instance, I've got four kids in the city public school system. There's just expectation that, you know, we've got to provide the paper towels, the tissues,
the whole nine.
Like every parent is trying to chip
sanitizer,
in to make sure that the classroom basically has what it needs. That's kind of an underreported probably cost that goes into all this as well.
Yeah. So if you can support a local teacher in school. Third story, and I have to say, this one kind of made me pop my collar and be glad to be a Philadelphian. The response to negative comments on a video showing a male Eagles cheerleader dancing during a recent preseason game underscores why we are called the city of brotherly love. Hmm. Let me tell you about it. Hours after people saw this Eagles cheerleader performing the team's dance routine, folks went online threatening to cancel their tickets. Take a look, listen. So there he is dancing in perfect form with pom-poms. And some of the comments, Kevin, were brutal.
Right.
And this is 2026, by the way. But what got me all choked up and a little happy was a response from Eagles fans who told those naysayers to hurry up and sell their tickets so the real fans could lock in.
Oh, because anybody claiming that they're going to sell their Eagles tickets because of this, I mean, you got to call that out as a bald-faced lie.
Call it out.
The demand for Eagles tickets in this region far outstrips the quantity that is available.
Oh, yeah. So if you want to be a hater, go ahead, sell those tickets. People will buy them. But all this back and forth got me on my soapbox, Kevin, because first of all, the Eagles have had male cheerleaders for years. Plus, as a former cheerleader, eighth grade, I know that the sport was actually started by men. Mm. And for years, it was an all-male activity.
Is there a local tie, Cherry?
There is. And you know it would be. The father of American cheerleading is a man named Thomas Peebles. He graduated from Princeton in 1882. He created the sport while he was a student there. He would cheer every time his team scored in football. He went on to become the first college football coach at the University of Minnesota, but he is the father of American cheerleading. And fast forward to today, women dominate the sport. It's rigorous, includes dance, tumbling, cheering, and stunts. But there are a lot of men. And 10 NFL teams have male cheerleaders.
How about that? And I mean, the history here.
Yes.
Again, it seems like every week we're talking about something that happened in the Philadelphia area. That's the first. It all comes back to history in this region. And it was just interesting and fascinating to learn about this guy, Thomas Peebles, who was like coaching and cheering at the same time, mm-hmm. running back and forth, and kind of starting what we know as stadium culture almost.
That's like right.
Sis Boom Ba kind of
Sis
stuff.
Sis Boom Ba, yeah. Princeton. That's what he used to yell every time his team scored. And now it's sort of evolved. People doing flips. You know, they're doing all kinds of stunts. It's a very vigorous sport. But shout out to all the Eagles fans who stood up.
Right.
And said, you don't mess with anybody on our team. We will be there in the stands cheering them on. Because our cheerleaders are part of the team.
And if anybody wants to sell their Eagles tickets to me at a discount because they're offended for seeing a male cheerleader, I am ready to buy. I'm ready
exactly.
to buy. Reach out.
And
we're ready to go.
Look, I'll be there too. Okay? Go Eagles. Go Birds, by the way.
That's right.
And coming up, we're going to have a serious conversation about the politics of AI data centers, and we'd love to hear from you. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Would positions on AI data centers affect your vote in the midterms? That's the question of the day. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. The resistance to AI data centers is cutting across all political divides, and it's becoming a key issue in this year's election.
Americans have quickly mobilized against the data center build-out. Recent polls show 70% of Americans oppose them in their communities, and politicians and elected officials are starting to listen, with many doing significant course correction on the issue.
Yeah, take Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, for example. Just last year, he was extolling the economic windfall that big tech would bring to the Commonwealth.
I'm comforted by the fact that thanks to Amazon, the future of AI is going to run right here through the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, because I sure as hell think those technologies should be developed by the hands of a Pennsylvania worker here in the United States of America, not in communist China.
Yeah, but voter sentiment has changed in a year and data centers have become the villain. Just last month, Shapiro signed an executive order placing restrictions on data center build-out and requiring local approval.
So why
has speculators are nevertheless scaring our communities, being aggressive with township officials, bullying our neighbors, our fellow Pennsylvanians, and refusing to listen to the people.
So why has the backlash against data centers been so fast and fierce? What does it tell us about broader fears around AI? And what does it mean for the midterms? We have two guests joining us this hour to talk it all out. Matthew Lewandowski, thank you for being here in studio. You're professor of political science and chair of the Institutions of Democracy at the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. And you are part of the new Annenberg Public Policy Survey about AI. Welcome, Matthew.
Thanks for having me.
And J.L. Holzman is a senior reporter at Heatmap News, an environmental news organization. Welcome, J.L.
Pleasure for having me. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes, yes, yes. And of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners, on the road, at home, elsewhere. Why do you think AI data centers have become such a hot button issue ahead of the midterms? And will it affect your vote? You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. For those of you watching on Facebook and YouTube, hello. You can leave your comments in the live chat.
Let's start with you, Professor Lewandowski. You've been doing polling around this. Help us understand how it's changed and just how fast it's changed.
Yeah, so this is an issue that really wasn't on people's radar even maybe 18 months, 2 years ago. It started to kind of come on last year, and we got interested in it, so we put some questions on initially about AI and then about data centers. And even, you know, 6-8 months ago, people were quite opposed to data centers, but there's been a pretty strong move against them over the first half of this year. So, and what's interesting to me about that is that this isn't a typical story in American politics where, oh, Democrats are one way, Republicans are another, or it's just one group or another. This is something that extends across party lines. So Democrats, Republicans, independents all became more opposed. Majorities of all three groups are opposed to data centers. This is true among younger people, older people, better educated, less educated men, women. Really, you know, we often in survey research will find that, oh, it's particular subgroups who are doing this. But this is a case where there's been a broad shift throughout the public.
I guess one of the questions will be, since President Trump came out pretty hard for data centers this mm-hmm. week, if we'll see how that influences polling moving forward, will it become more of a partisan issue? I know that you don't know the answer to that, but I'm sure that's something you're going to be looking at moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, to me, a really interesting kind of political moment in that we don't think about Bernie Sanders and Ron DeSantis agreeing on a lot,
right.
mm-hmm. but this is a case where they do agree. And really the one person who has not pivoted away from support for data centers is Donald Trump, which is an interesting move. We'll see, you know, if that persists. But, I think this is a moment where, and there are a set of reasons we can get into about why data centers are, you know, particularly problematic. But I think more generally, there's sort of a sense of this moment of, if you look at the way people are feeling about flock cameras, about self-driving cars, about the fact for the first time ever, companies have lost suits based on the, you know, communication, the 1996 telecom bill, right? This is really, I think, a kind of moment where people are worried about technology and about change. And I think they're looking for politicians to really kind of take a lead. And there's a moment here for either party to kind of figure out what the right sort of policy is and really kind of lead. Because I think that's one of the other things that's come through, not just in our survey, but in other data. People want there to be some sort of policy and don't feel like they're getting that from either side now.
Yeah. And JL, we want to bring you into the conversation because you've been reporting on this, some of these disputes in communities across the country over these data centers. I want you to zoom in a bit and try to give us a picture of what we heard the professor talk about. What are you hearing? What have you seen from communities who are opposing these data centers? What are some of the reasons?
So I like to describe the data center backlash as part of a broader industrial tech lash, a new backlash to the rise of advanced technologies of all kinds. Before, I was covering the fights over data centers. I was covering the fights over solar farms and wind farms and battery storage facilities. And the dynamics with all of this relatively the same. What I see with the upset over data centers is overwhelmingly communities not wanting very large new structures that have large demand figures for to their ears, for everything from power to water, things that could produce noise pollution, light pollution, construction. Really, this is a reminder that communities across this country have been, before the data center boom, trying to be more conservative with their zoning plans. Mm-hmm. And so, including rural communities, and that large landowners, especially in agricultural communities, are going to care more about property values per se than some sort of marginal increase in tax revenue to a county.
And so one of the things that Matt talked about was the big jump, and we didn't mention this, but it's a 12% jump in just a few months in the numbers. And now you have 70%, which is a large majority of people against these data centers. And so I want to talk about people organizing. What have you seen? Because this we've seen here in Pennsylvania, people have been able to organize. They've gotten together. They've shown up. How, if you try to give us a wide view of how that organizing is happening and how effective these communities have been.
I like to say that my job is to go onto Facebook all day, because really this organizing happens predominantly on Facebook pages, where ordinary people use these platforms in a way similar to, honestly, the way people used Facebook 20 years ago when it really started to take off. People are using it as a community platform for organizing in a way that the town square used to be. But instead, it's all around rallying against, yes, buildings that are tied to artificial intelligence, potential surveillance, but also people just overall struggling under the inflation of our current moment, rising gas prices, hearing there's going to be higher energy prices, impacts to property values, concerns, some real, some not founded, around water use. And then they mobilize by kind of doing a similar playbook that you'll go to a town meeting, fill the meeting up, and remind local government officials who are used to seeing municipal meetings be snooze fests, that people are really, really upset about this. And when you have that kind of outpouring, that's going to change things.
So, Matthew, I guess, how much of this is just typical NIMBYism, where there's a reflex of, I don't want this new thing happening in my backyard. And I brought up some of the examples kind of historically in the setup to the show, where if you were doing polling around, do I want 10 new factories in my neighborhood in 1880, people would say maybe no. And if, do you want the interstate to come through and be paved through this part of the neighborhood, this part of the state? They might say no. Big towers of internet connectivity, et cetera, that infrastructure build out might not be so popular. So how much of that can you comment on, and why is this moment potentially different, or is it?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting question. So one thing we tried to do was look at places where data centers were already in progress or had been planned, and look at how opinion was different there relative to places where there wasn't any, proposed data center or action. And one of the interesting things that happened, so in the earlier study that we did back in the first quarter of the year, there we saw a bigger difference where there was more opposition in places where data centers had been planned. But now we're seeing that even in places where, there haven't been any plans or we can find any records that there were going to be data centers there. And so I think there's an interesting shift in the way this issue has gotten nationalized. And I think part of it is sort of given the way that we were just talking about, how people are viewing this. So this is an issue that in many ways has been framed as a small number of very wealthy people and tech companies are going to really benefit from this, and the costs are going to be borne by your local community where the data center is, or more broadly, we can think about AI, and it's going to be white collar people who are going to lose their jobs. It's going to be, children who are going to have a less effective education, right? So it's this, kind of classic political science, like concentrated cost versus, benefits. And so I think that framing is also partly why it ends up not just being like, oh, well, I'd like a data center. I just don't want it to be here. I
Right.
think part of this is also just, no, I don't like data
Yeah.
centers.
And we were talking before the show, like how
Yeah.
much of this is about the data centers and big tech needed to tell a better story about what the
Yeah.
benefit is of these things potentially. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's been the most interesting thing. You think about how a lot of political issues tend to go, even self-driving cars, which is kind of a personal interest. If you look at those hearings, right, there are a lot of people opposed, but you also, if you watch those hearings, you'll hear from advocates for the disabled or the elderly, right, who will talk about how this will free, give them a lot more freedom, allow them to go more places. People who have children will say, oh, I feel safe letting my, teenagers maybe ride in them if I could track it on an app. But you don't really, in these data center fights, hear anyone kind of making that positive case. So it's just sort of like, Apple or Amazon or whoever just being like, well, we need this to be able to do this without articulating a kind of case as to what you're getting from it.
Yeah, let me read a couple comments. A commenter on YouTube says, when billionaires tell me what I need, I'm an automatic heck no. If Trump likes data centers so much, build one next to Mar-a-Lago or the White House. Joanne says, the opposition to data centers is a reaction to the powerlessness many of us feel at the intrusion of big tech into our lives. Big tech wants everyone to move out of the way, including government, so they can maximize their control and profit. And by the way, our question of the day is, why do you think AI data centers have become such a hot button issue ahead of the midterms? And will it affect your vote? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And on YouTube and Facebook, hello, you can leave your comments in the chat. And JL, I would love to get your thoughts on Kevin's question and Matt's comment. Do you see people who are in opposition to these data centers and community having any way of sort of connecting what the data centers are meant for and their own use of AI? Is that even a factor in the opposition?
Historically, the development of very large-scale infrastructure has the industries behind them, those industries have been able to build inroads by, yes, connecting the benefits, quote unquote, from constructing the project, the end uses, to what's being built. You know, take oil and gas, right? You know, that you need that for cars. Take mining, you know, you've heard the phrase critical minerals. Well, we need that lithium to build an EV. We need that lithium to build your phone, right? That's the case that people have made for these large-scale energy projects, for example, in the United States for quite some time. The AI data center build out, I've been covering resource development in this country my whole career as an environmental journalist. I have not seen an industry do such a bad job at trying to make basic headways of trust with local communities. A very important way that the industry has been failing to do that has been relying on non-disclosure agreements, mm-hmm. this practice of secrecy in business that tech companies are used to using in Silicon Valley, and then making local government and state government employees sign NDAs. I myself have reported on how people within the Shapiro administration may have signed an NDA with Amazon with relation to their development in Pennsylvania after my reporting as part of the Shapiro administration's change of tack on that front. They no longer will allow NDAs and to be involved in this practice at all. And so I think that is itself, you know, one of red lines that the industry has been crossing.
And I want to talk about these red lines, JL, because one of the thoughts that came into my mind is we've talked about this opposition that has taken place and the opposition shutting down these projects. But are there examples where the community has come together, they've organized and extracted concessions from the data center industry and have made it work? And what were those concessions, if you have an example?
So, I mean, we're starting to see examples. In terms of specific ones, it's actually not really helpful to describe an individual one, because this is actually a trend that we're starting to see where mm-hmm. data center companies, as well as the AI companies, big tech companies that have invested in AI, they've started giving millions and millions to municipalities and counties to do things like building schools, helping fix roads, working on water infrastructure upgrades, things that, as I just mentioned, the oil and gas industry and mining industry have used very successfully to build favor in not just American communities. This is the history of large-scale industrial development that we've seen for at least the last century, is that you go in and you build a community relationship. The last thing I would say is there's this thing called a community benefit agreement. Mm. A community can try and craft a formal legal agreement at the behest of opposition with a developer or with a tech company that requires certain setbacks, property setbacks. You know, it can't be so close to people's homes, certain noise controls, things like right. that. That's one way that communities can
win. Because it feels like communities do have real leverage at this point. Yeah. With all this pushback and, you know, politicians, obviously, as we've been saying, have been following the political winds. So if you take every reason a community might be opposed to a data center, and then you come up with some sort of thing that you can demand the company do to mitigate mm-hmm. that, be it noise, be it environmental, be it water, be it electric. It seems like communities could demand those things and get them, because all these tech companies are in competition with each other. They want to be on the forefront of building these things out. So you're saying to Anthropic, okay, you want to do this? Well, this is what we want. Or to Amazon, do that. Are you seeing examples of that playing out? Is that really maybe how this is going to go in the next few years?
So the way that land use planning at the local level usually works with stuff like this is, first, a county will either threaten, or a municipality will threaten, a town will threaten, a city will threaten to do a moratorium, right? We've seen in a couple of states, New York and Texas, for example, although we're starting to see momentum in other states like Arizona, New Hampshire, momentum toward doing statewide moratoria and then eventually doing guardrails, some sort of water use guardrail, mm-hmm. energy use guardrail, setbacks, noise restrictions, things like that. What I'm expecting to see is that process of regulation becoming the primary vector for eventually getting the companies to the table and being more responsible. Because I know, as well as a journalist, I've visited one of the noisiest data center stories in this entire country, a project that is in Northern Virginia, where I visited the community on Earth Day, and it was practically unlivable, the amount of noise and just smell pollution, air pollution that was going on there due to gas infrastructure on site. It was terrible. Property values have plummeted, and there's nothing the community can do. So when you have cases like that, where unfettered development is happening, And then you have communities going, what can we do? Usually regulation is the method key. Or yeah. some sort of community benefit agreement.
And so, Matt, I'd love to get your thoughts because you're talking to people, you're surveying people. And, you know, politically, I mean, I just wonder from, you know, situations that you've been part of and surveying people, sort of what happens when people realize that they have leverage? And it seems like we're seeing 70%. I mean, do you expect those numbers to continue to go up and for those numbers to sort of continue to sway and push our lawmakers to regulate and to step up and do what they need to do?
Yeah, I think that will be something really interesting over the next couple of issues, or next couple of elections, sorry. You're already seeing this issue kind of come up in 2026, and I suspect these sorts of things are going to be quite central to 2028. And so I think that we will continue to see these sorts of things mattering, because I think it is sort of this, you know, general sense of like, oh, you know, tech really has kind of eaten so much of the economy, so much of these other things. I think people are sort of in a moment of unease about this. And so I think one of the interesting things to think about is we've been in a political moment that's been, I think you could describe as stuck for a while, right? Neither party can really command a sort of durable majority, which, you know, historically has not been the norm in American politics. You know, I've sometimes wondered, oh, is this maybe the issue that one party or the other figures out how to address this more effectively, and that will then be the thing that comes and breaks the deadlock that's kind of governed most of the 21st century.
Yeah, and JL, as we wrap up, I'm just kind of curious about, like, you know, there's opposition here in the Philadelphia area, but there's a lot of places in Pennsylvania that are like former industrial rust belty type towns and areas, and I could see them wanting development that is, you know, promising tax revenue and promising jobs, etc. Have you seen any evidence that the tide will turn there, or what's happening there?
I think you have about a minute, by the way. You have about a minute.
Sure. I mean, the struggle with everything is employment with that one. Appalachia actually has a considerable amount of data center opposition, including in PA. And what we're finding is that the lack of new jobs that come with a data center is the reason why, you know, when people say we're going to revitalize coal country or revitalize gas country for new jobs with a new industry, people think it's going to come with the same amount of jobs. That's not the case with data center development. And instead, it powers AI, which, as we know, impacts future employment for other people as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much to Matt and to JL. We appreciate you being on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And so much.
Yes, Matthew Lewandowski is professor of political science at the University of Pennsylvania, and JL Holtzman is senior reporter at Heatmap News, an environmental news organization. After a quick break, we'll be back with more about the politics of AI data centers with input from a Democrat and a Republican strategist. We'll be right back. This is Studio 2. Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron. Before we jump back into our conversation about the politics of AI data centers, it's time to reveal this week's Giveaway Wednesday event. Al, hit it. That's a cover of Wilco's Jesus, Etc. by the local group The Tisberries, and to mark the 20th anniversary of the Yankee Hotel Foxtrot album, Ardmore Music Hall is hosting a tribute show full of local bands playing Wilco covers on Thursday, September 16th.
Yeah, and a pair of tickets will run you $54, but if you're the fourth to email studio2@whyy.org, you'll get a pair for free on us.
This hour, we've been talking about the AI data center backlash, and now we want to look at how it's reshaping the midterm elections. It's become one of the key issues in campaigns and political ads. With us to talk about how it's influencing the candidates and their strategies is Christopher Nicholas, longtime GOP political consultant and author of the PA Political Digest newsletter. Thanks for being back with us, Christopher.
Good to be with you guys. You've upgraded since I was here last. Now we have a video component.
We're glowing up all the time, Christopher. And we've also got Patrick Murphy, former Democratic U.S. Representative from Pennsylvania and the former Undersecretary of the U.S. Army. He's going to join us in just a moment. Yeah. Why don't we start with Christopher Nicholas after our question?
1 second. Yeah, our question of the day is, why do you think AI data centers have become such a hot button issue ahead of the midterms? Will it affect your vote? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you can leave your comments in the chat. I'll read this comment from Susan from Kennedyville, Maryland. Thanks for writing in, Susan. She says, I'm curious about the basic legislation that would make it so data centers would create their own power and recycle their own water. I'm not a fan of data centers, but they would see so much less opposition if they actually ensured that they weren't drawing too much power and water from local communities. And we'll talk about that in just a moment, Susan. But Patrick and Christopher, we're so happy to have you. And so my first question is, you know, I'm a politician and we've seen this on both sides of the aisle. Last, you know, months ago, I was standing on a podium celebrating the billions of dollars in investments coming to my state or my community, all the jobs, right? Thanks to data centers. And today, I'm running an ad telling voters that I'm going to be the one to protect them from the big bad data centers. How do you make that U-turn without voters saying, you know, wait a minute, you helped bring these things here? And Chris, we'll start with you and then Patrick will get your thoughts. How do you make that U-turn?
So I'm too old to really know and care about Wilco, but I am of the age that I remember Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And one of the big quotes from that movie is, life comes at you hard, right? So I liken this to people's opinions on data centers being like airplanes circling the runway, getting ready to land. And for a long time, people couldn't figure out their opinions on data centers. And all of a sudden, a couple months ago, bam, all those airplanes landed and the opinion on it shifted and gave everybody whiplash. So in my newsletter that I write, I've talked about data center is kind of like Pac-Man eating the pack notes, the little dots that Pac-Man ate. That's what we're seeing on data centers. It has totally rewritten campaign 26. That and the Democratic Party's leftward tilt and the democratic socialism, those two things, along with President Trump's faltering popularity, those are the three big drivers in campaign 2026. And you're right, a lot of politicians, including the governor, have kind of reversed themselves, had a come to Jesus moment, and now are trying to keep up with public opinion on this, which, like I said, changed in the last 6 months.
Yeah, Patrick, would love to get your thoughts on how, you know, politicians are navigating this U-turn.
Sure. Sherry, Kevin, it's great to be with you. And Sherry, it's always good to be. I know your husband is a U.S. Marine. So, and as you know, this is a national security issue. We are in a AI race against China, and there's only going to be one winner. So we have to make these investments, but they must be done the right way. And it's not a U-turn. What you saw from Governor Shapiro is leadership. You know, it's like the three bears, you know, with the porridge, one's too hot, one's too cold, one's just right. You know, in states like Texas, they said, la-di-da-di, everybody, whatever you want to do. In states like New York, it's like, nope, we're not doing anything. Governor Shapiro releases grid standards, the governor responsible infrastructure investments, right? He did that, and then he tweaked it last week and said, hey, listen, we need to add another layer of transparency here. We need to make sure that local communities are involved. So he's leading. He's not cowering in this fight against China. And so it's doing two things, Sherry, and I think it's really important. We got to build data centers because they're tied to AI, but we got to do it the right way. They were not done the right way for way too long. We have to protect our communities. We have to make sure that these data centers are off the grid, that they're bringing their own energy. That's what Shapiro's plan is and his executive order. But they also must sure we have to create jobs. at a time when American families are suffering, and these are good labor jobs. I'll be quiet, Kevin.
Let's talk about the China of it all, because I think some people, you know, might see it like just question: is this a real concern? How much of a real concern is it? Is it fear mongering? And you seem to be all on the idea that no, this is something real that the America needs to reckon with, and if we sit on our hands on this, we're going to be at a disadvantage. Christopher Nicholas, do you feel the same way?
Look, I don't think most people worried about their local zoning are worrying about something happening across the world in China. And I just flat out reject the notion that somehow to keep up with China, we have to build 90 data centers in Lackawanna County, which is the county surrounding Scranton. And a recent story in PennLive.com showed that there are now 90 data centers on the drawing maps for Lackawanna County. That's just not sustainable or connected to reality. Mm-hmm. And to get back to what Patrick said, there's one candidate in the race for governor, Stacey Garrity, who wants a moratorium on data center development so everybody can catch their breath. And there's one candidate, Josh Shapiro, who wants to keep building them. So if voters are interested in that issue, please take note of where the two candidates have ended up.
And just to note the scrambled politics of this year, we've got Democratic strategist Patrick Murphy sounding like he's agreeing with President Trump, and John Fetterman, who's also a Democrat, and Christopher Nicholas. Sounds like you're not so much in agreement with President Trump because you're supporting Stacey Garrity.
And who is proposing something that Bernie Sanders would support, by the way.
And Kevin and Sherry, if I could just say this, and Chris, I love you, brother. You're Bucks County guy too, but you know, she was for it before she was against it, right? She's pulling the old John Kerry. The reality is this, is that people, serious leaders in America, in a public sector and a private sector, no, we got to do this, but we got to do it right. Some states are getting it wrong. Some states are getting it just right. I do think Governor Shapiro has led on this, but has been transparent. And to make sure that we're clear, we cannot build data centers that are going to pull from our electrical grid. In the last 2 years since President Trump took office in Pennsylvania and every state, but in Pennsylvania specifically, our energy costs have gone up 20%. Now, the electrical data centers, of that term said, about 4% came from data centers, right? We need to do a better job at making sure that if we bring these data centers online, they have to follow Shapiro's executive order, follow those grid standards, making sure they bring their own energy. But these, to say that the AI race isn't tied to national security is
And I want to bring in a caller because we're talking about China, and this caller has some issues with that. Brian from Harleysville is on the line. Brian, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Sure. I appreciate you taking the call. You know, I read an interesting article recently about it's actually maybe a press release from X, so we'll consider the source. But they mentioned they found 200,000 Chinese bot accounts kind of spawning negative AI stories or kind of injecting that into the social media world. And your previous guest mentioned Facebook as sort of a grassroots place where this opposition was developing. And I'm curious, you know, it's ironic that one of the key concerns we have about AI is what will it do to sort of hack the human psyche? And I'm wondering how all of this ties together, and do we have other forces affecting the AI conversation that maybe we're not paying attention to?
Yeah, that's Brian from Harleysville. Would love to get your thoughts on Brian's question. Do you feel like there's foreign entities injecting pro or even negative sentiment into this data center debate? Your thoughts, Chris, your thoughts, Patrick.
Well, you know, one of the powers of the American system of democracy is not so much the conclusions, but the process. We have a process steeped in our history that allows us to work through these problems in an open way, which to a lot of foreign powers, they think is a deficiency in the American system. But I think Patrick would agree that that is not a deficiency, that's a benefit, a positive of our American system of democracy. So look, we'll work through it. Are there bot accounts on Twitter saying pro and con? Sure, but Twitter's not real life. Someone sitting in a meeting in their local township, remember in Pennsylvania, zoning happens at the local municipal level. They're not worried about what some bot account on social media saying they're worried about their electricity and their water usage. Mm-hmm. And have they been locked out of the process, which is what the Shapiro administration has done by seemingly centralizing everything through the governor's office.
And I have a quick follow-up before I let you, before I ask you to sort of comment on Brian's comment, our caller there. Patrick, I'd love to get your thoughts. And we talked about this in the first part of the show. Do you feel like the data centers really screwed this up in the sense that, you know, yes, politicians on both sides of the aisle welcomed these data centers with open arms, and now people, you know, even the governor talked about, you know, running roughshod in over the communities, lack of transparency, bullying, you know, elected officials in different communities. Your thoughts on just having to rein them in because maybe they dropped the ball and did this wrong?
There's no doubt that there's been bad actors, Sherry. But the when you look at as far as AI, it's going to invest about $16 trillion in our global economy in the next, it has and will another trillions of dollars the next 4 years. It is, we have to be ahead of the curve. But there have been bad actors. And that's why I appreciate the transparent and authentic leadership of Governor Shapiro. He has gotten it right. He released the grid standards and he tweaked them because he's like, hey, we need to get local communities involved. And hey, hyperscalers, you need to be transparent on how this is working, how many employers and employees you're hiring. Now, these are union jobs. The North American building trades and the local building trades across Pennsylvania have been wildly enthusiastic on creating these jobs. But let's be clear, it's not just the jobs that we create there. It's the jobs that are tied to AI in our service economy with all sorts of jobs and professions across Pennsylvania and our country and across the world. Can I go to Cherry a little quick and Kevin?
Sure.
There is no doubt. If you read them really quick, there's always foreign entities that don't want America to succeed. And in America, we used to have politics that would stop at the water's edge. I get it. People always want to play politics. But if you look at the Mueller report, again, Vietnam veteran and head of that report, FBI director, came out and said, hey, Russia spent tens of millions of dollars to try and tip the scales of the 2016 election for Trump. He may have won regardless. I'm not saying that, right? But to think that China is not trying to divide us from within, they always are. And right, they're investing in, and they got caught red-handed with these 200,000 bots. So, but it doesn't change the fact that we got to do right by these data centers.
Christopher Nicholas, as a GOP strategist, it sounds like if you were whispering in the ear of President Trump earlier this week, you would have counseled him to do something else. You think he's making a political misstep here in the statements he's making, where he's essentially saying, if you're a community that's not investing in AI, you're going to be backwards and poor?
Well, a couple of things. I think the question here is about inappropriately cited data centers. I think perhaps the president, the information he's getting is that all of these are being developed on old, decrepit, abandoned land. And there was an op-ed recently by the American Conservation Coalition, a right-of-center pro-environmental group that specifically said in the Washington Post, hey, let's perhaps build these on old Superfund sites. No one's going to really complain about that. That'd be a great transition of that property, of course, if it was remediated enough so the construction workers could work there safely. But I think people get the difference between an AI center in Falls Township on part of the site that used to be U.S. Steel, where my grandfather worked as a safety guy on the 8 mil, and putting a data center there versus putting it in virgin farmland up in Mifflin and Juniata counties in central Pennsylvania. So I think that's what I would say to everyone is, you know, the gold rush on data centers is over. Yeah. People have become more educated on them, and they have fairly quickly come to the conclusion that as currently presented, they are not worth the price that local communities think they would pay. So the developers have to do a better job of explaining this. The governor has to stop using NDAs at the beginning of the process and then chest thumping when he says we're not going to work with NDAs anymore. That's to me a big flip-flop on his part. So let's do this right. Let's not be rushed. That's why I think Stacey Garrity's call for a pause so we can all catch our breaths and not be thinking like we're under the gun on this.
Yeah.
That's why I think that's a good next step.
I didn't realize we had a gubernatorial debate on the show today, I didn't realize, but here we are.
Pro Garrity and pro Shapiro here. I want to read a couple comments and then ask a question because we only have a couple minutes. Neil from South Jersey says, I think some of the pushback against AI data centers is because corporate America has so much power. Regular people feel powerless. People are tired of this. And Matt says, how much do you think this resistance to AI data centers is about resistance to AI generally? Is the data center opposition just a manifestation of a general anxiety? And I want to look ahead because, and quickly from both of you, I mean, is it time for both parties to sort of step up and deal with technology generally? And data centers is just the tip of the iceberg because, and I say this, the legislature has been behind when it comes to surveillance. The legislature has been behind when it comes to AI. And now they're trying their best to catch up when it comes to data centers. Your thoughts as we look ahead, not just to 2026 and the midterms, but to 2028 as well.
Start with Patrick.
Patrick, yes.
I would just say there's no doubt there's anxiety with AI and the workforce. People are afraid of losing their jobs, and they should be. We got to make sure we do this right. But you also have a president, you know, with an approval rating of, you know, 36% right now, 33%, who basically, you know, says, hey, we should build data centers. If you don't do it, you're wrong. No, you got to do it the right way. And that's what we're doing now in Pennsylvania. And I applaud that.
And we got to give, and we got to give Chris 20 seconds to close it out.
Yeah, sure.
I think part of this is, the human reaction to losing control, like your one commenter said. But I think now it's moved into a situation where now people are looking at it from a local zoning and a local control angle. And that's what's important in Pennsylvania is local control over zoning.
Well, thank you, Christopher Nicholas, longtime GOP political consultant and author of the PA Political Digest newsletter. Thanks for being on Studio 2 today. And Patrick Murphy, former Democratic U.S. Representative from Pennsylvania and former Undersecretary of the U.S. Army. Thank you for being here, Patrick.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Sherry.
Yes, thank you so much to all the callers who called in. We're sorry we ran out of time and couldn't get to you. And thanks to everybody who wrote in. And, of course, we got to say thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Hazel May Bryan, and Ben Abrams. Mike Schiffler and Al Banks are our engineers. Kevin McCrory, who's been co-hosted today, is our executive producer from WHYY right here in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Thanks for listening.